Wednesday, January 28th, 2026, and you're listening to Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Today on the program, we're in the book of Revelation. We're in chapter 2, looking at verses 8 through 11 with a message titled, The Persecuted Church.
Smyrna, this wonderful church, in an environment of total persecution, maintained what they were to be in their witness. The most tested church as to their commitments and what it would cost them was the most faithful church. The most tested church as to their commitments and what it would cost them is here shown to be the most faithful.
And now here's today's message from Pastor Chris.
Well, if you're a visitor tonight, we are working through the book of Revelation. And we return to our study in the book of Revelation after a few weeks. And tonight we come to chapter 2, last book of the Bible, of the church in Smyrna. And I will be reading these verses 8 through 11, the second church that's dealt with here in chapter 2. This is Revelation chapter 2, beginning at verse 8. This is the word of the Lord. And to the angel of the church in Smyrna write, the words of the first and the last who died and came to life. I know your tribulation and your poverty, but you are rich. And the slander of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. Do not fear what you are about to suffer. Behold, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison that you may be tested. And for 10 days you will have tribulation. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. The one who conquers will not be hurt by the second death. And there's the reading of God's word tonight. May the Lord bless the hearing of his word. I began last time in our study in the seven churches here in this book of Revelation, this last book of the Bible, by observing that already in the first century, the churches were not in good condition. It's kind of shocking because we would expect, right, that the churches of Jesus Christ would be full and they would be glowing and that there would be no problems. But when we study the witness of the New Testament, we see exact opposite realities explained to us, don't we? You remember what Corinth was like? They had become the worldly church. They had become the church that bought into all the wrong things using the cultural methods of the society and the great wow stuff to try to win people to Jesus, thinking it was all about the show. We have so many churches in the New Testament that Jesus is showing us in the witness of the New Testament that there were many problems. But that's not to say that Christ was only about observing the faults in churches. And that's why I love coming to the second church tonight in the book of Revelation. That's what makes the church in Smyrna fascinating to study. Jesus has a lot of positive to say about this church. Oh, sure, it was a church just like every other church that's full of sinners. But the amazing thing about this second church in the book of Revelation is Jesus has no criticism for her. Where do you find it? I find that really moving and something to capitalize on for a minute, that he's not criticizing this group. There are churches out there, and this should encourage us to think about, there are churches out there that are being very faithful to their mission, the Great Commission. They're being very faithful to the witness that Jesus calls them to give. And we need to hear that, don't we? We need to hear that the Lord has commendations. The Lord's just not about exposing all the sin, but about also commending and building up and encouraging and pointing out the good that his churches do. And that's very helpful for us tonight as we look at this second church here in Revelation. Jesus here sets apart this church to encourage them, and the message is really quite simple. He's encouraging this church to remain faithful. To remain faithful to what their message is and what they're doing. To remain faithful in the midst of some very hard things that are going on and will happen to them. And I love to emphasize that tonight and how the Lord encourages this church that was being tested like no other church in these churches, being tested like no other church, and he gives them the encouragement and the commendation that they need to go forward. I want us to ask and think about tonight, why did this church receive this kind of treatment? Why is the Lord so encouraging and positive with this church? That should interest us, shouldn't it? You can understand this a little bit by comparing it to the problem that we considered in Ephesus, which was a church that had been strong doctrinally speaking, that was willing to defend the truth, but in everything they did, there was no love. They had abandoned the love that had originally drove them in their mission to be concerned about people, to be concerned of what was the heart of the ministry in taking the gospel out. Their love for Christ, their love for one another. The love had been abandoned even though they had continued to fight for all the right things. Well, Smyrna's somewhat different, aren't they? You could say what's remarkable about Smyrna is that if Ephesus left its first love, Smyrna kept it. And I love to think about that tonight. Smyrna, this wonderful church, in an environment of total persecution, maintained what they were to be in their witness. The most tested church as to their commitments and what it would cost them was the most faithful church. The most tested church as to their commitments and what it would cost them is here shown to be the most faithful. And I believe that's a very powerful message for us. I want to learn from the church in Smyrna tonight because Christ desires for them to know that he sees what they're facing, he sees what they're going through, and he's with them, he's strengthening them. Remember the imagery of him walking among his lampstands. He's walking among his churches. He's encouraging them to remain strong in what they're doing, even when there is extreme danger on the doorstep and martyrdom is knocking at the door of some of their own members. So that's the intro. Let's look at this and what Jesus is doing and saying to this church. In verse 8, we read that to the angel of the church in Smyrna write, the words of the first and the last who died and came to life. You remember what Jesus does is he's taking a description of himself from chapter 1 and he's holding it out, some particular description of himself in chapter 1 and holding it out to say to each church, I know your situation. I know what you're going through. I know what you're facing. So here he's directly applying what he went through to their situation. Right at the beginning of this letter to the church in Smyrna, he's reminding them that he died and that he rose, that he was victorious. Over the ultimate expression of persecution that ever happened, there was a victory that he won for them and that he had been through it. God's plan was working itself out to save them from the second death. And you'll notice that was the very end of this little section here to this church in Smyrna. We'll consider that. What was this church facing? It's fascinating to do somewhat of a historical study and background in these particular cities where these churches were. Let me give you a sense of the city. Just to the north of Ephesus, 35 miles, was the city of Smyrna. The city was known as the Pride of Asia. Of all the seven cities mentioned, this one was the most glorious. In fact, there was said to have been a great rival between Ephesus, Pergamos, and Smyrna to be known as the most prestigious city in the Roman Empire. In fact, their coins in Smyrna claimed it. They dig these things up all the time over there, and we get more insight every dig they find. And in these coins, they claim that they were the first city in Asia in size and in beauty. Why is that important? Well, the simple fact that here, Smyrna had become one of the most known loyal cities to Rome. Do you know that there was a massive temple there called the Dia Romana? And what made this temple so unique was that it was the only temple to have personified Rome as a goddess. A big, massive temple sitting in this city. It was a temple for worshiping Rome. Now, about AD 25, all the cities were vying for the right to build a temple for the Emperor Tiberius. And lo and behold, Smyrna was awarded the privilege. So in addition to the Dia Romana, there was a massive temple there dedicated to the Roman emperor. Tacitus, a historian, wrote in his annals that Augustus and Tiberius, emperor from 14 to 37 AD, had allowed a single temple to be erected in their honor during their lifetime. Such a temple would not only contain a statue of the ruling emperor that would be venerated in godlike fashion, but the temples were dedicated to the Roman people. This matters because it was just expected in these cities that you would worship and be involved in the cult worship of Caesar as God. It was expected. Julius Caesar had a statue built with the Latin inscription, Deo Invicto, to the unconquered God. The people would walk into these temples, and they would sprinkle incense on a fire, and they would burn before the emperor's bust. Smyrna was a patriotic city. You had all there the emblems of Rome's great accomplishments. This would be like putting up a Smithsonian there with all the accomplishments, and you would have to go to the Smithsonian and bow before the symbol of Rome. Guess what the symbol was? An eagle. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? Bow before this stuff. All of this was worked into the people. It was taught to the people. It was expected of the people. Here's Christ. I want undivided allegiance to me. You don't bow to Caesar and bow to Jesus. You don't bow to Caesar in his kingdom and bow to Jesus in his. That's not how it works. Jesus wanted undivided allegiance to him. They couldn't worship Caesar as Lord. Behold, Israel, the Lord your God, the Lord is one. Remember that. So Jesus, what do you think started happening? Well, Jesus recognizes it. Jesus observes what's happening to these Christians in Smyrna, in their particular environment. He says in verse 9, notice it, I know your tribulation and your poverty, but you're rich. And the slander of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. Such a mouthful there. He is really exposing exactly what they're going through and knows what they're facing. I see what you're going through. I see what you're going through in that city. This church was counting the cost. It had awful consequences in Smyrna. They were counting the cost for their commitment to Jesus. And Jesus says, I see it. I know your works. I know your tribulation. I know your poverty. They got together as a church. They met together. They worshiped. And they said, we can't be involved as Christians in the temple cult. We can't bow to Caesar. So they did what Acts 2 said. They devoted themselves to prayer and the breaking of bread and the word. And they did this and separated themselves in this way. And the city responded. What began to happen? Well, it wasn't that the church was poor because these people were just peasants with no money. It was that these people had a lot and became poor because as the Christians stood against things and as the Christians refused to do some of these things, the government began to take it. Well, you know how easy this could all start happening, don't you? You know how easy this could all start happening. The situation became so bad that the only way you could share in the city's wealth and the city's prosperity was to be involved with these temples. This is how even business was done. So economic prosperity and social acceptance was determined by your involvement in the Roman cult, the worship of these things. That was a great pressure for them, wasn't it? It's a great pressure. You know, the city began to ban the Christians from trade. The city began to ban, many of you have businesses here. All of a sudden, your businesses are now taxed and banned, and they're taking from you. Taking your property. That's what they were doing to them. Taking their property, taking their trade away, taking their money. All for a stand in believing Jesus. The Christians became poor. I see it, Jesus says. I see it. But I want you to know you're rich. I mean, what an encouragement in the right way, isn't it? That often, though, we have to recognize here that what is a result of poverty in this life is often going to be a direct cost of Christian discipleship. That's something we have to think about. That often loss in this life of stuff and things is part of the cost of Christian discipleship. Christians refuse to do this stuff. They refuse to be involved in the shady business practices and in the things that were going on, so they lost materially. And they were known as the poor church. That's the first thing they faced. Jesus then adds another thing, and I see something else. I see something else. I see the slander against you. I see the slander by those who say they're Jews but are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. Whoa. Guess who was causing all the grief for them? The Jews. This all sound familiar from this morning? Mark was written to Roman Christians who would face the same thing. Look at what we're looking at tonight. The Jews were the one religion exempt from the worship of the emperor. And they were exempt from that worship because Rome loved antiquity. Rome loved old stuff. Rome loved old. If you were old, you were established, you were accepted. But they didn't like new. And the way that the Jews slandered the Christians was to pitch them to Rome as a new religion, a new novel thing. And this was their way of bringing down upon the Christians, the early Christians, who claimed the Old Testament, who claimed everything of the Old Testament. But now in fulfillment was that they were novice and new. And Jesus here recognizes exactly what they're doing to them. They say they're Jews, but I want you to know, this is so fascinating for how Jesus looked at the New Testament church. You know, we have a whole group out there that wants to rebuild the temple and restore the kingdom to national Israel. Jesus totally is done with that project in that way. The temple is above. The temple is the Jerusalem above, which is the mother of us all. Notice how Jesus says, they say they're Jews, they're not. A true Jew is one inwardly whose circumcision is that of the heart and the spirit, Romans 2. They're not Jews. They're a synagogue of Satan. They're doing Satan's will by assaulting the Christians. So they were totally being slandered as a sect. They were slandered as deviant to the Jewish religion. Jews wanted nothing to do with Christianity, and Jesus says, I see it. This church is remarkable because it's unwavering in its commitment. They're out there. They're involved. They're not tucked away. They didn't close their doors. They're out there speaking in love to their neighbors. They're out there involved with their neighbors. They're out there taking stands. And the sufferings because of it were great. So what does Christ do? Well, he calls them to courage. He knows how discouraging this all can be. And you'll see how this applies to us here in a minute. What does he say? You'll notice that he essentially says, don't fear any of the things that you are about to suffer. And then he tells them what they're going to suffer. Showing he's king. He holds the future. And he is the one in charge of all that. And he says, there are certain things that are going to happen here. Look at what he says. Do not fear what you are about to suffer. Behold, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison that you may be tested. And for 10 days, you will have tribulation. Remember when I said that at the beginning, one of the principles of Revelation is to say he's borrowing and using the language of the Old Testament with symbols and figures to help us understand present realities. 10 days, you're going to be tested. What's on Jesus' mind? I believe this. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the king's portion of delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Remember, this all had to do with idolatry and bowing down to things. Therefore, he requested of the chief priests of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Remember, here, this is what it says. Please test your servants for 10 days and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be examined before you and the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies as you see fit. So deal with your servants. So he consented with them in this manner and tested them 10 days. And at the end of the 10 days, their features appeared better and fatter in flesh than all the young men who ate the portion of the king's delicacies. The test. 10-day test. And it was these very figures, Daniel, who'd be thrown in the lion's den and not touched, and the three of his friends thrown in the fire and not touched. See, I believe the Lord's using this to say to this church, you're going to be tested, but you're going to be protected by me. I'm going to guard you. I'm going to help you. Ultimately, there's nothing the wicked can do to harm you. Ultimately, nothing. So Jesus just looks at this church that has been very faithful in standing against idolatry, has suffered poverty for it, has suffered slander, and now he says, you're really going to get it. 10 days. The devil himself is going to focus all his energy on you. Now imagine if this were here. Imagine tonight if this message came to the Escondido URC and said, 10 days, and some of your very members are going to be taken out and burned at the stake. Sober us up a little bit, wouldn't it? We'd have to think about counting the cost, wouldn't we? Some of you will die. That's what Jesus just said to this church. Jesus says, this is all going to happen so that you may be tested. I think about this a lot, that often, and we don't reflect on this as we should enough, but that often the church is tested and faces periods of testing. And how do those tests usually come? Well, it usually comes in controversy, doesn't it? The church has to say something's wrong. The church has to direct people's lives. What happens when people hold tight to idols? What happens when people want to do what they want to do and elders have to step into that and say that's wrong? You know how that's viewed today. What happens when the church doesn't support certain things? What happens? You ever thought that all these things that come around to a church and all of a sudden you're faced with this controversy is a test that the Lord has brought on the church? They're going to come. You don't escape it. We always say this to elders and deacons being installed. You're going to get hit. You're going to have a test. The church goes through some great trial, and what happens? I mean, we could go down the line. Some member of maybe a family in the church has gone out and is living in sin, and now is going to face discipline. And what happens? Everyone rallies around their family member. Anger happens.
That's all the time we have for you today here on Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Be sure to tune in next time for part 2 of this message. Thanks again. Until next time, God bless.